So it's that situation that we're looking at. We think it's only reasonable for us to be looking at establishing some sort of a tax base to offset, you know, the cost of providing those services. Yet, if we do, that same business, that same investor, would be assessed a property tax, and when he starts to be profitable, an income tax on that same investment.
An income tax by the tribe?
No, an income tax by the state.
For the state. Can I try a hypothetical?
Sure, mm-hmm.
So let's say Wells Fargo wants to set up a call center, and Jefferson County's been courting them. They've got some vacant buildings and some good land, and they maybe have 50 jobs that they want to, you know, call center you can now do anywhere. And the state is promoting these types of businesses. What would be, under the current law, the impediment to Wells Fargo coming to the tribe would be still pay state income tax and face the prospect someday, the threat of tribal tax? Is that a fair characterization of why Wells Fargo might go to Madras instead of Warm Springs? One reason?
It's the uncertainty,
right,
of not knowing what the tax situation is going to be, and also knowing that the local government has to fund those services somehow.
Right. So, if I may, Mr. Chair, if this bill were passed and the Wells Fargo call center they get a tax credit for the amount of state tax they would pay. Help walk me through this. They would you would lure them in how under this
it would be
bill.
A tax credit. My name is John Melfi. I'm an attorney for the Warm Springs tribe. Mm-hmm. There's a tax credit for the amount of tribal taxes paid. Whatever sort of taxes are paid to the tribe are offset against state income tax.
So it would only be if the tribe then imposed a tax.
Right.
Okay.
So then the state would receive from tax, and
gotcha.
The tax would go to the tribal.
So you could then impose a tax to pay for services, and this and the business would get a state tax credit on that.
And I think, Mr. Chairman and Representative Beck, it's very important to note that the business pays the same amount. This doesn't create a tax haven, as we testified before. I would also add that, you know, incentives, there are other incentives to locate in Madras, Bend, or Redmond. For example, Highway 97, for example, existing housing, proximity to schools. I mean, a lot of the kids from Warm Springs are riding an hour and a half each way, you know, to school up in Madras. So it's a you know, there are other, certainly, incentives that this bill can't address and the legislature can't address.
Mr. Chairman, other. We addressed this the last hearing, and I give you another chance to sort of think about it. I think I raised the issue of whether you would be willing to establish some threshold of tribal employment in conjunction with this type of law so that a certain percentage of the employees at a business that locates on the tribe would be tribal members as a way to try to transition tribal members into employment. I assume that's not in the amendments now, but is that something you could ever explore as a provision of this? Or is there a good policy reason, or is that just prohibitive because people, I think Louis had said, it's a lot of people don't have the skill level yet to get some of these jobs, so it'd be difficult. But is that something you would think about or could phase in over 10 years? You understand the idea.
Representing Beck, that's the reason that we're, you know, trying to develop and diversify the economy,
right,
is to create new jobs opportunities for residents, and the residents are primarily, you know, members of the tribe or other Indians.
We certainly do get people who commute from the surrounding area to work at Warm Springs. We have for 40 years,
right,
as far as I know. And that'll continue to be the case. But primarily, we're developing the reservation to provide job opportunities for the residents that are there. I don't think there's any provision in the bill that relates to that. And are you suggesting that there should be something in there that requires a minimum percentage of Native American employment to become an eligible business?
I'm suggesting it be something worth thinking about. I'm not pushing it. Mr. Chairman, what for instance is the tribal? What is tribal unemployment right now on Warm Springs? Do you have any sense of that?
It's 30% or better.
30% or better.
It goes down in the summer because we have a lot of seasonal type of employment.
And what is the tribal employment at, say, Kenita? What percentage of tribal members? Is it 100 or 90 or 50?
It's only about 15 to 20%. It's up to about 20% in the summer. Of 300 employees, 20% would be about 60.
Are tribal members?
Tribal member. There are some other Indians there as well. Probably bring that up to 80 or 90.
I guess that...
It's not as high as it was when we first opened Kenita and rebuilt it back in 1964 or 65.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, that illustrates my point and concern that... And here's Kenita, which has been in operation for 40 years. And now they have a very mature enterprise, and yet only 15% of the employees are tribal members, and so the rest of the employment is coming from off reservation, generating traffic, and not promoting. Somehow, something is not happening that is promoting tribal members to be employed or seek employment at Kenita, even though they live closer to the facility in some cases. And I guess I would hate to see a program like this grow in such a way that new businesses have incentives to come and locate on the tribe, but there aren't commensurate incentives to encourage tribal members to work at those facilities, to lower that 30%, one of the highest unemployment rates in the state for community.
Representative Beck, perhaps Kenita is not a very good example.
Maybe not.
In that regard. For instance, at Forest Products, Plumpton's Forest Products, our employment of tribal members and Indians is about 90%.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's just like many communities who have tourism-related industries, businesses in their areas, there's a lot of turnover, and we find that the younger generation will work at Kenita and then get some job skills. And then they're looking for a different job, one that's not seasonal, one that's year-round,
sure,
and maybe the one that has a better pay structure.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Wood, I think you were next.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. three or four, I think, fairly quick questions. Number one, the tribes currently have full authority to levy taxes. They simply haven't done it in these cases. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then secondly, we are talking about here the imposition of potentially a variety of different taxes. It's not necessarily income taxes, it's not necessarily property taxes, but it would be taxes upon some business activities or property taxes for which you are seeking the credit. Is that correct? We're not clear here in this bill as to what form that tax would take.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt. I think that's correct on most properties. Remember, we corrected the confusion about existing businesses, and that if someone's going to add something to the existing business, that would just, there would only be a property tax.
Your point being it could be property tax, income tax.
I don't think the bill stipulates.
Yes, a new business facilities, new businesses on the reservation. That's correct.
So the tax could take one of many different forms on this new business or new business activity. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Witt, that's correct.
Okay, and then finally, on page 5, at the top, under paragraph 4, it says the credit is allowed to the extent the tribal tax, only to the extent the tribal tax on which the credit is based is imposed on businesses not owned by Indians on a uniform basis. Mm-hmm. So under this bill, this would allow you to tax businesses that are not owned by Indians differently than taxes on businesses owned by Indians. Am I reading that right?
That's correct, and the reason for that is that almost all of the business on the reservation is tribal enterprises. So they're tribally owned businesses. The revenues go to the general fund, which are then, just as this body and the Senate determine how you distribute the general fund, the tribal council at Warm Springs does that. So the money's already going to them. So if we didn't have that language, yes, we could do it as a tax instead of as a dividend, but it would just mean shuffling the deck chairs, really.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bates.
Just a couple of quick questions also. The way I understand the bill, and correct me if I'm wrong again, that if the tribes were to levy a tax on a business of whatever form, they would reimburse that in a credit to the company, and the tax would then ultimately go to the tribe still. My question is there any upper limit on those taxes? For instance, I mean, it would seem to me that if a business is up and running and the tribes decide to levy a very high income tax on that business, that the business wouldn't be hurt by it. They'd be held harmless by the state picking up the difference. But in fact, the tribes could get a windfall of cash from the state because that's the way the bill is written. So is there an upper limit on these taxes? Is there specifically what tax they are and how high they can go in there?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bates, the limit is on page 4 in section 34E, and if you look at 3, it can't exceed the tax liability of the eligible business for the tax year. It also can't be carried over to the next tax year. So it's
Mr. Chair, can I follow up?
Mm-hmm.
I may have read that incorrectly. I read it a couple of days ago. What it struck me is, I'm sure they can't carry the tax credit over, and it can't be more than they're eligible for. But my question is, since it appears the tribe would be setting the tax, how much they're eligible for would be set by the tribe. They could set a very high tax if they wanted to. The company wouldn't be held harmless because of the state would pick the tax up in essence. The tribe would collect the tax. And I may be misunderstanding that, and I apologize if I am.
They would only be eligible for credit to the extent that their tax liability for the
state. Well, that's right. Don, do you want to try to answer that?
Chair, sure. Representative Bates. The limit of the credit is the tax liability that would otherwise have been imposed by the state. So if there's $1,000 in state income tax liability, that's the limit of the credit.
In other words, you have to, Mr. Chair, you basically have to follow the tax laws of the state, and you can't exceed them. The tribe has agreed not to exceed them. Now, the tribe is a quasi-separate nation. Are they actually held to that by law?
Well, this, Mr. Chairman and Representative Bates, this is a change to state law. It's a change to a small change to the tax code of the state. So the tax is on businesses doing business within Oregon, which are subject to the laws and the sovereignty of the state. It's not a tax on the tribe. So we don't get confused about that. A non-Indian operating on the reservation for most purposes, almost all purposes, is subject to state law. Non-Indian business, the same thing. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On May 10th, we got a letter, and I think we heard some testimony from Jefferson County on their concerns. Do these Dash 8 amendments, did you have a chance to have some conversation with them and resolve those concerns?
Mr. Jackson, I was in a meeting with Jefferson County folks. We can't actually speak for Jefferson County, of course, but we certainly tried to deal with concerns that were raised. Let me just say that there, that original testimony, as Representative Witt carefully walked through it with us, involved a proposal that has been withdrawn by the tribe, and we're now at a point with the amendments where we have a standard enterprise zone, so that while the initial proposal could have affected local government revenues, it now doesn't. You just have a 3-year, 5-year period, and then the local government collects the tax on the property. So I think a lot, some of the concern anyway that was raised was about our proposal, not what actually ended up in the amendments, if that helps to clarify.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Let me bring up Gil and county folks.
No. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties, here at the request of Jefferson County. I've had discussions with Jefferson County since the last set of hearings you had on this, and they tell me that they've had ongoing discussions with the Warm Springs Tribe, but there hasn't been any resolution as a result of those discussions. They had a series of questions that they'd like to have answered. They also wanted to be clear that the county does indeed provide services to tribal members, both in terms of health, public safety, and filing of legal records. I've just seen the amendments. Their preference would be to have an interim to continue to let the ideas mature. But if the legislature intends to act, then they would be willing to accept a traditional enterprise zone situation with all the criteria that are now in statute for enterprise zones, including the definition of eligible business, and have it limited to land on the reservation. So no trust lands off the reservation area. These amendments, I'm not sure they're entirely clear as to whether the statutes, all the statutes, are incorporated in the concept of the enterprise zone. At section 34F on page 6, line 2, it starts with a phrase, except as otherwise provided in, and then refers to sections in this amendment, which changes, as I understand it, changes the definition of eligible business. So I'm not entirely sure that this would, provide the identical kind of enterprise zone that we now have in statute. And that's Jefferson County tells me that if they were made to accept, if the bill was going to move with amendments, that would be the extent to which they would be comfortable having amendments read.
Okay. Any questions on these? I think we have a sense from the committee that we want to spend at least one more time mulling this. So, yes. Uh-huh.
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, I'm Mike Burton, Assistant Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and basically want to repeat Mr. Riddell's concerns. Those are the same ones the department has. I've had extensive conversations with the proponents and with Jefferson County. My understanding, I've received assurances to this and would like to get those assurances on the record if we could, is that there are really two mechanisms that would be invited in this bill. One is the fairness element and the tax credit, income tax credit, which is a policy decision that you guys need to make. Second is, I am told that there's also an intent for an incentive, which is the traditional enterprise zone property tax incentive. We understand that. I've had conversations with Jefferson County that that's what folks at Warm Springs intend to do. Jefferson County tells me that if we're talking a regular enterprise zone for the incentive piece with a three-year time limit and so on, they're fine with that. They have no problem with that. In fact, there is an enterprise zone in Madras now. So I don't know if we need to clarify the language in 34F or wait and have a conversation in the interim, but the department would like to have that clarified, the intent from the project proponents, if we could. I would answer questions.
Any questions for Mr. Burton?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'm wondering if we could, it's a House bill, whether the parties think they could work some of these things out between here and the Senate. I don't know how far we are off on this or whether... I'm trying to get a sense of whether this is something people are ever going to agree on, or is this an agree to disagree, or... there are some clarifications that can be done in the Senate Rules Committee if you're lucky enough to, if you're luckier than the rest of us up here, get a hearing on your bill.
Chair Shetterly, Representative Beck, my understanding is that with what I just heard from Mr. Riddell is that everyone's basically in agreement that there are meant to be these two separate pieces, and that the property tax incentive piece is meant to be just a regular enterprise zone program. So I don't think there's a lot of disagreement on that piece. I think there is the policy issue related to the income tax credit that's on your plate.
Michael?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Beck. Not to stretch this out, appreciate the committee's time, but it has absolutely always been the tribe's intention that this be a regular non-enterprise zone for the property tax exemption. We will pledge here today that we'll work this out on the Senate side, and we're not expected to pass, because I will say, of course, ambiguities are interpreted in the tax code for credits and exemptions against the people claiming them. And, you know, so if there's an ambiguity there, we don't think they would get away with that strained interpretation, but we would be glad to fix this.
Gil? Yes, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Judge Mike MacArthur, Sherman County, but I'm here today on behalf of the Lower John Day Regional Partnership, which represents Sherman, Gillum, Wheeler, Wasco counties, and the tribes of Warm Springs. And I want to say that we're working very closely in the regional partnership to support the tribes and their economic development efforts, and know how difficult it is for them to develop businesses on the reservation and support their efforts to do that, along with our other efforts in the region. And I want to mention also that Wasco County is a partner, is a big part of the reservation and probably needs to be part of the discussions. But I think there's a way that we can work cooperatively with the tribes to identify what it is they're trying to accomplish here, and work with the counties in terms of the service provisions that the counties...
So you don't think this is agree to disagree forever and always kind of proposition?
No, we're very much in support of the tribe's efforts to try and attract businesses there, and if it takes some sort of enterprise zone designation to do that, we would be supportive of trying to work out the details of that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2131, sorry, and... let me open, we'll see if we can bang one out here quickly. It's scheduled for public hearing, but we didn't get it noticed in time, so instead I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 685. Elizabeth, that's you too, right?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, with Senate Bill 685A in gross, it allows a port district to levy a property tax for the purpose of providing revenue for law enforcement to a city or county in which the port is located. Basically, a port district tax rate won't be exceeded, and whatever amount they want to transfer is a local decision by the port district. So basically, under current law, there are requirements as far as what port districts can use their money for. This would allow them then to be able to use some of their port district money to be able to transfer to a law enforcement. Could be a county sheriff's department, or could be a law enforcement special district. And this will just allow more flexibility in allowing these port districts to meet their law enforcement needs. There's basically 23 port districts in the state. They impose approximately $10 million in property taxes, and this is just going to allow them for local districts to decide what portion, if any, of a port district's tax revenue that they would like to transfer to cities and counties.
Okay. Ken Anderson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong, Oregon Ports Group. Not a problem, Mr. Chair. Representing the Oregon Ports Group in support of Senate Bill 685, to give you just a little bit of background on Senate Bill 685, ports currently have the authority to provide law enforcement services on their own property or for their own facilities. What ports do not have the authority to do is to provide more general law enforcement services throughout the port district. This issue came up as a specific result of Curry County down on the South Oregon coast, which Curry County has been having some difficulty in providing sheriff's coverage in the south part of the county. That happened to be where the Port of Brookings Harbor is located, and the port had explored the possibility of using some of its resources to help underwrite the cost of sheriff's deputies to cover South County. The attorneys concluded that that is something that is not allowed under current law because ports can only do those things that are explicitly authorized in statute, and so the port sought or and is seeking legislation to clarify that they can use their resources to enter an intergovernmental agreement with the county to send some of its money up to the county to cover law enforcement services in the South County area. I want to be very clear that the engrossed version of this bill requires that that the only mechanism the port has is to go out for a local option levy. So the voters need to consider it. They need to the question needs to be posed to the voters, and they need to give it an up or down vote as to whether or not the port is going to use that local option levy to help pay for law enforcement. It cannot. The port cannot just take a portion of its existing resources or funds and send those off to a county. So really all we're asking for is the legislature to give authority to the port to go out for a specific local option levy, which our attorneys have told us they don't currently have the authority to do.
So the language then, Ken, on lines 19 and 20 of the bill where it says only as prescribed in 280.040 to 280.145, is that the local option?
That's correct, okay. Mr. Chair.
Questions for Mr. Armstrong? Okay. Well, we're in work session. Is there any opposition to this bill? I mean, anybody here to testify on, anybody else to testify on this? Any of our local government folks? Anybody else? Okay. Head's shaking. Yes.
Would you like
Well, let's go ahead and get a bill out today.
I would do Senate Bill 685A, 2-4, do pass recommendation.
Representative Beck moves Senate Bill 685A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative
Fay. Aye.
Staff.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Staff.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Beck.
Aye.
Vice
Chair
Charles.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 685 goes to the floor, and the port bill will give it to the only member of the district of the committee with a port in his district. So.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Do you have it? Oh, I'm thinking, yeah, you're right. Small ports. Okay. Small ports. This is sort of a small port bill. No. That's right. You're sitting
on a port land.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking coastal ports when I was running that down. Representative Brown, anyway, would you carry it?
I will.
You want to co-carry it?
No.
All right. All right, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 685. Everyone noticed the on the third reading list today, we do have the co-carried bill by Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
On the third reading. One of the first moments of the session. We find our humor where we can find it. We are good.